Jason Jubilee. You're listening to Authors Like Us.
How's it going? We're here with Susan Juby, and she's the author of some great books, the Alice I Think books, and she has a new book out now, not Drinky Pants, but for some reason that's the title that's in my head. It's called Nice Recovery.
Why did you think it's called what? What
about Drinky Pants?
Why did you think it's called Drinky Pants?
You need to look at Facebook more, man.
Apparently.
That's like the big joke.
There's a lot of things I need to do more. So, is this book now officially out?
Yeah.
Yes, the subtitle, I wanted to call it Drinky Pants, but the publisher said that didn't sound serious enough. So it's Nice Recovery is the name of the book. So I snuck it into the subtitles.
Okay.
And Sherm, who's he up against right now?
Sherm is up against A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, and is busy stomping on the neck of A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
That's excellent.
Beautiful. It's very heartwarming to see that.
So here we are. I can't hear. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry. I saw your lips moving, but no sound was coming out, so I got worried.
I was just trying to confuse you.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought maybe your studio was haunted.
Only by ants.
Really?
Yes, wow. I have a lot of ants in here right now. That's what happens when you're writing studios in the woods.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Oh, well, where are you?
In Nanaimo.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that, but...
Yeah.
So, I remember hearing you speak once at a meeting and talking about how you kind of got your start writing, and I was wondering if you could tell that story again, because if I recall correctly, you used to write on the bus.
That's right. I had a long writer's block from age, say, 13 to around 27. And I couldn't seem to sit down and make myself write, so I had to trick myself into it. So I had a long bus ride. I was working as an editor in Kitsilano. So I had a bus ride from, like, Marpole to Kitsilano. And my technique was to, instead of bringing a novel, I don't go anywhere without a book because that's scary, was to bring a blank journal instead of my novel, and that forced me to write something. That is the grand technique, is to make not writing really painful.
But I find that frightening for me because I find it incredibly hard to write unless it's in an extremely controlled environment. Now, James, I know you're different. You can write in a coffee shop, in an earthquake, and all of that stuff.
I pretty much need the coffee shop or earthquake, otherwise I get distracted too easily.
Right, and I'm the opposite. I can draw or sketch anywhere pretty much, but when I write, I like to have a very controlled environment. I like, I don't want interruption. So, Susan, but it seems to work for you. Like, how do you write on the bus when people are chatting and they're having all these inane conversations? Did you wear headphones?
No. The people around me was part of what forced me to write, is that I was either going to have to sort of interact with people or stare into the middle distance, which is an awful thought. So writing was a way to sort of isolate in a group, part of why I read so much is that I don't really like being exposed to people without something to do. So poor social skills, number one. And the white noise of like a coffee shop actually worked really well, as long as it wasn't too busy. So I went to Calhoun's in Vancouver, big barn, sort of all night place.
You know it well.
And there when it was nice and quiet. And so it worked. I just sat and did my little bit. Now I write here in the studio, and so I'm quite accustomed to it being quiet and all that sort of stuff. It would probably be hard to change back.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. So your technique has changed. So you never, like, for old time's sake, take a nice long bus ride just to get the writer's groove going?
That would be a pretty long bus ride from where you are to Calhoun's.
Yes, it would be a very long bus ride.
It would be, you could get a lot of writing done.
I could. I tried on the ferry. The ferry is just awful if you're trying to get work done because of the nature of the noise. Like, I like a constant hum if I'm going to try and work in public. But at the ferry, people come to where you're working at one of those little workstations, and they stand beside you on their cell phone and have hugely intimate conversations, really, really loudly. Nothing I can write can compare to the glory of listening to that. So, yeah,
that's. You've got that annoying fairy voice announcer coming on every 10 minutes.
And the annoying fairy voice announcer, and all the children having meltdowns and poor parenting all on display. So, no, fairy's not good. But when we first moved here, my writing studio is, that's what it is. It's a, like a little loft thing where I can write separate from the house. And I thought, oh, I don't know how to do this. It's too quiet in here. So I actually drove from our house downtown into Nanaimo and started a coffee shop. But people here are much friendlier than in Vancouver. So they started to know me after two times. And they'd say, hey, what are you working on? And they'd sit down with me, and I thought, okay, fine, I'm going to have to write a studio.
So that's why you invited ants into your writing studio to get
this. I said, come on in. Ask me what I'm working on. Anything to distract me. That's great.
And I want to talk to you, too, a little bit about, I know that you you have a horse.
Yes, that's a sad story.
Uh-oh.
Just be prepared.
Should I not bring it up? We can.
Why you should talk about pets.
I can edit it.
No, you can. It's fine. You can ask away. I had a horse. Yes, it was wonderful when that when Alice, I think, got turned into a TV series. The first thing I did is run out and get a horse, of course, and it was wonderful. And we had a wonderful. What, you have a horse?
No. You said of course. You said I went out and got a horse. Of course, and this sounds like a Dr. Seuss book now. But why? Of course, is you always wanted a horse?
I've always loved horses. I rode a lot, and my mom always paid for the riding. So I needed some serious cash to have a horse. So I went out and got one, you know, the big, when I get older, I'm going to get a horse, and it's going to be so great, and all that. So I got my horse. We had a wonderful time for a few years, but then he, just a year and 3 months ago, he got very, very sick, and he didn't get better, and so... He actually died just before Christmas, not last year, but year before.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was unbelievably traumatic. So, anyway, I miss him a lot, and so I'm not riding right now. I'm still recovering.
Yeah, I understand. Well, we're big cat lovers, we get that.
Yeah, there's something about that 1,200-pound pet that just takes it to a whole crazy level, so, yeah. But thank you for asking.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad I could be there to bring up these important memories for you.
It's a therapy. It's a show about therapy, really, you know. It's cathartic. That's how we sell it.
I'm going to just mark off questions 9 through 17.
He's lying. We have no questions prepared.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know...
save me, Lee.
We're going to get onto the theme, because you mentioned about how Alice, I think, was made into a TV show. So, how was that experience, having something you had written being turned into a TV show? Did you have any involvement with writing the script, or was it taken off your plate completely out of your creative control?
My agent had me called a creative consultant. So... that's a nice word for...
Being creatively ignored?
I would say that they were incredibly gracious about showing me all the scripts and so forth, and the production manager came to my house, and we talked about how I visualized where Alice and her family live. They were really, really great about involving me. I do suspect, though, if I'd sent back those scripts with, you know, a ton of notes about how I thought things should go... That would have maybe annoyed people. So I tried to just learn from the process. Like, it's not my skill set. I don't know how to write scripts. And I loved what they did. So, and they did invite me to set. I went two or three times. And they first said, they asked me to do a cameo.
I remember that.
Oh, you saw it?
Oh, yeah.
God.
The cameo?
I was customer number two, and it was wonderful. I had three words, not three lines, but three words, which were, you do so. And so I practiced on a ferry, you know, you do so, and, oh, you know, like that. And so I was really owning those words, and then I got there, and I had my own trailer and my outfit for customer number two, and so I was just so stoked. And they said, if this goes well, we're probably going to have you do lots of cameos on the show.
As the same customer number two, or as different people?
I don't know.
I only saw you once on the show.
Well, there's a reason for that. So I was all ready. I went to makeup. I was ready. I knew my words. And then I got into the store. They had turned it, a bookstore, into like an even prettier bookstore. And I was all ready to do my thing. And then I realized that I'm sort of an introvert and I don't like being looked at all that much. So you get into, and there's just so many people, and people at home are all abnormally good looking. Like, they're all really attractive, which makes it even worse when they stare at you. And, yeah, so I just started to, like, sweat profusely. And I didn't get my work right. I said them sort of really, really snarly, and the girl who played Alice everyone was a consummate professional, and they just had to keep redoing my take over and over. And at one point the director came over and said, "Could you tone down the bitchy?" and so I, that didn't increase my confidence much. And so finally, on about the 800th take, I was supposed to try and buy one of my own books from Alice. So I kept doing it wrong, like using the wrong hand or saying something wrong. And finally, and then after she was a pain to deal with, I storm out. That's my customer number two, tries to buy the book, then storms out, thwarted. And so I stormed out, but I stormed directly into a large light fixture, like, wow. And the sound, and there was people running, like, author down.
Susan, you could be an honorary member of Authors Like Us. Yeah. You're as clumsy as we are. How do I word this? Didn't you realize that being on TV entailed being watched by countless people?
Well, I'm a big one for blocking out the stuff I don't want to look at. So, yeah, I guess I did. The thousands of people weren't the problem. It was the people in the room. It just felt really...
intimidating.
Yeah, I was not a natural. And so in the back of my mind, I'd had this idea that I was going to get discovered, and there'd be this one clear... Sarah Polley would come, probably ask me to do a movie. So, yeah, they were very nice to me, though. They gave me moon boots.
I
probably single-handedly destroyed the budget
for the entire series by walking into the lighting.
There would have been 14 episodes if they hadn't had my cameo.
Wow. Yeah. You brought the whole thing down.
Yeah. I did, yeah, down around our heads. Yeah, oops.
So you said that you treated that experience as something, as a learning experience, just something you wanted to learn from. So what did you learn other than that you're not
an actress?
Or is that what you learned?
That you'd be banned from film sets everywhere.
What I learned is that I would love to learn how to write a script properly. So I'm working on a pitch for a TV series, so we'll see if that comes to anything. And I learned that it is such a very distinct skill to be a screenwriter, a screenplay writer, all that stuff. It's really challenging structurally. I'm a bit of a slob because novels, you just, and then you fix it later. You can't do that in film and TV. You have to take a more structured approach, and that is my downfall, so I've been really working on that.
That sound you made, that's an interesting description of your technique.
I can't even remember what this sound is.
It's too bad that we can't get, like, the hand movements on the recorder as well.
For the listeners out there.
Yeah, if you need some advice on how to write, woo!
You need to wiggle your hands when you go, woo!
It's almost like Bewitched.
It is.
Yeah. I'm getting a grip on it.
It's sorcery.
It is sorcery. If this was a video, whatever, I would show you that I'm getting total control over structure. I've got my, I'll try not to unplug you.
We can always take pictures.
Index cards?
Oh, yeah, I see them. She's got index cards all over her wall.
That's color-coded. Yeah, that's a plot right there.
Wow.
I know. It's new for me.
It's like you're growing as a person.
It is. It's wonderful. If it wasn't for index cards, I'd be stuck forever.
So that tells me I'm very process-driven because I always have plot outlines and charts, not because I need to. So this sounds like that's not normally how you work, that you're a little bit more organic with the, and then you, now you're becoming more formalized in your approach to...
I'm more like you with the, ooh. That's me. Yeah.
Well, partly it's because I started with comedy and I wanted to write sort of comic scenes. And then I also had, when I started writing it, just a few years before I finished my undergrad in English and was convinced that thanks to all the studies of postmodernism, the plot was over and it was very passé and even maybe a bit tacky. So when my book was bought, the editor said, oh, it's really great, but now we need a beginning, a middle, and an end. And so I'm still working on recovering from my studies of postmodernism.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it is interesting. Because I'm the opposite. I'm extremely plot-driven.
So,
And you weren't wanting to be a writer to begin with, right? If I remember correctly. You didn't want to be a writer to begin with. You had other aspirations.
She was an actress.
Well, in my heart of hearts, I would have loved to be a writer. I didn't think I could be a writer. So I failed at a fashion design school. And I have done about 800 other jobs, and I've worked as an editor for years. Yeah, so I didn't set out to learn plot in the way that smart people do.
Yeah. And you know what, Susan, I don't think you give yourself enough credit, because most of my friends are in this industry in some capacity or the other, and James, all of us kind of feel like imposters sometimes, or I think a lot of us in our heart of hearts wanted to be authors. Were any of us smart and really set out to learn the craft properly?
I was going
to
be a mechanic.
Oh.
Yeah, and then I had the 800 jobs too.
Yeah.
I mean, every conversation I have with Lee, I'll be like, no, I remember when I was at this job, and he's like, how many jobs have you had?
Yeah, every time he opens his mouth and tells a story, he's like, I remember the time I used to sell axle grease out in the prairie. I'm like, what the heck? So,
yeah. Well, the best thing I've done is teach creative writing, because it's forced me to really not only hone my craft, but also to be able to put it into words and to practice it and all that kind of stuff. It's been very useful. You've probably found that.
We both teach creative writing, and it's pretty much what I do full time. And I found that it has made me a much better writer. Uh-huh. And I think it's the old, if you want to become really good at something, teach it. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's interesting that you have had the same experience.
Actually, some of my students that I still keep in contact with were in the class that you subbed for. You subbed for one of my classes. They still talk about you. They really enjoy
you. It's like, did you tell them the acting story?
I don't know what I told them.
You know, I remember, I think Alice, was just starting out, and you brought in a video of it.
I did, yeah.
And I think
when it got to show TV.
Yeah, took up like 2 hours of the class, and then...
Oh, you were a rock star.
No, I only showed them half an hour, James, promise. Right. You did do some writing.
He's not judging. You'll never sub in this town again. No.
That's right. Lazy, lazy, lazy.
Where are you teaching right now?
I teach in the master's program at UBC. And I'm teaching genre fiction at VIU, Vancouver Island University, formerly known as Malaspina, and introduction to fiction there too.
Oh, cool. Wow. Yeah. And you love teaching? Is that obviously it's something you're doing enough of it? You must love it.
I really love it. Yeah, it's really, I don't know, I find it engaging and it gets me out of the house. And it's, it's exciting to see what people come up with. It's exciting to see voices develop and all that stuff. I'm very engaged by it.
I told you I was socially inept. I've alienated our guest.
That's right. She's totally hurt.
We should ask her question. We only have one prepared question that we generally ask.
What? Well, you know how everybody gets asked, what inspires you? The author's favorite question.
Okay.
We're not going to ask you that.
Yeah, so
we have no interest in what inspires you.
It's only my best story.
Oh. Well, you can flip this question around. Yeah. We want to know what doesn't inspire you. So what is it that either sucks away your inspiration, makes you feel drained, or you can interpret it like this. It's what gets you out of your head so that you can relax and clear your head and be prepared to, write the next day.
Oh, that's super hard. What doesn't inspire me?
That's why we ask it.
Yeah, that's why we ask it. It's the one that nobody thinks of.
Did you tell the story?
There's no cheating in this. There's no crib notes. Mind you, Arthur Slade said Britney Spears.
Doesn't inspire? I think Britney Spears would make a great story. Nobody. Don't you think?
Writing about
a Britney Spears itch? Does it get any more interesting? There's madness. There's hair shaving. Sorry, Art. I guess that's not your thing.
He did have an Iron Maiden watch to show us.
Did he?
Yeah, yeah, he had an Iron Maiden watch. It was very cool.
And
a treadmill.
And a treadmill.
He had a lot to live up to, Susan.
Yeah.
Okay, so what doesn't inspire me? I honestly can't think of something that doesn't... I don't think you could make something interesting. Even watching TV can be interesting. You know what I mean? Like, you can take anything, especially the mundane stuff, and make comedy out of it.
Except for me, if I'm flipping through channels and I come across pretty much any reality TV show...
Yeah.
I feel the life force sucked out of me like you're draining a battery, and I begin to melt.
Whereas I love the sharks, and...
Oh, I like sharks. And who said what? Oh,
the sharks. It's a reality TV show.
About what?
Sharks? Like real sharks?
Have you ever seen Dragon's Den?
Yeah.
It's...
Let's see. MMA?
Yeah.
Dragons aren't real.
Oh, dude. the sharks are basically the American version of the Dragon's Den. And it's two of the guys from the Dragon's Den who started it. So they have one of the millionaires that they are billionaires, whatever, that they have on it is the guy that started, like, the shopping network. And they take investments from people who have business ideas.
What does this have to do with sharks? When do they...
That's what they're called.
Do people have to...
Because they're business sharks.
Oh, now I'm seeing... Yeah. I'm completely uninterested. For a minute there, I thought there was real sharks.
But even, you know, don't you think it's funny how if... Okay, so... You've protected yourself, Lee, from the reality shows, but the way that the boxers and the fighters cry so much, like, to me, that's totally entertaining. They weep more than anybody else. They weep more than the models. To me, super interesting.
It seems like, so this is my, I guess this is our way of trying to find out what type of personalities people have, because there's some people who are completely inspired by everything around them, and they can't turn it off. And there's other people that, perhaps more like me, and get uninspired and want to go crawl in a hole.
Yeah, maybe what happens with me doesn't deserve the term inspiration. I just get sort of intrigued by most things. If the thing that I, you know, we had talked about what I can't do in writing very well, which is description, like long passages of beautiful description.
Can I just say thank goodness?
But it makes me, you know, and I've tried to sit down and do some beautiful description, and it just comes out terribly. Which doesn't mean that I don't walk through the woods loving everything around me and wishing I could write in a poetic, sort of prairie kind of way about it, but I truly can't. So, I don't know that there's anything I could say definitely doesn't inspire me. Everything does.
Okay. That's a fair answer. I mean, that's all we were trying to get at.
Actually, I wrote about this unbelievably. I still can't believe that I even wrote that book, Nice Recovery. But in the book, I talked about I had a little drinking problem when I was younger, when I was a teenager. And I was a bit of an attention hound when I was in my cups. And so in this one particularly undignified moment, I pretended to drown in my friend's pool. So her whole family was there. Everybody from our high school was there. The whole world was there. And I, to this day, can't figure out what I was thinking. Is that I would just float, like I was drowned. And then someone would come in and fish me out. And then I go back in and pretend I was drowned. And I did this all night long. And that's the kind of thing. See, you're both wincing. You're both just like, wow, I don't even know.
I'm looking for words and I'm not finding them.
Yeah, there are no words.
I don't know you anymore.
What's that?
I feel like I don't know you anymore.
But how is this embarrassing? It wasn't embarrassing at the moment, was it?
Well, when I sobered up, it was embarrassing.
I can see it being embarrassing now.
Yeah, in retrospect, it's embarrassing.
The next day, I thought, what was that? My most embarrassing moments are just sort of the kind of embarrassing moments where no one knows what to say after you tell them. They just think, oh, well, you know, there might be medication for that.
Faking one's death?
What's that?
For faking.
Over and over.
Oh. Over and over.
Yeah.
Susan, there's a story called The Boy Who Cried Wolf. Have you heard it?
Yes, I have. And apparently I really took it to heart.
Is that a reenact your own version? Like,
yeah.
It's a modern version of The Boy Who Cried Wolf.
That's right. The girl who cried, I'm drowning. Oh, no, I'm drowning again. It's unbelievable. I'm drowning a third time. So, anyway, if anyone wants undignified, I'm always here for you to tell you terrible stories from my youth.
Susan, we need to hang out because then I may be able to actually look graceful and dignified in comparison.
You could. Anyone could. It's my gift to the world. Everyone gets to feel sophisticated and together and not embarrassed.
There were
people who liked to hang around with me back in those days because you could get away with anything with Captain Embarrassment in the room. You could do anything because I was just a big beacon of embarrassment, so you could get away with just all kinds.
I had a friend like...
It's like dinner and a show. Right.
So there, isn't that a wonderful writer's story?
It's awesome. Is that story in the book?
Yeah, and that's like one of the milder ones.
Okay.
Are all those stories based on real life experiences?
In Nice Recovery?
Yeah.
Yes, it's a memoir. So, yeah, unfortunately, it's all true.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Well, congratulations.
So, 20-some years old, however, so, yeah, thank God.
So, did you find, is that a bit of a release, then, to give those stories out to the world? I mean, that's pretty heavy stuff, then. I mean, that's pretty making yourself pretty vulnerable.
Oh, it's not a release yet. Now it feels like I thought being a writer felt exposed and that you felt vulnerable to rejection and all the rest of it. I thought that a new book made me nervous. I had no idea just how messed up I could get before the release of a book. So yeah, no, I'm completely just sort of like, you know, hiding, waiting for it to be open.
Yeah.
And I assume that one comes out on the other side, invulnerable, just, you know, since you're totally open, you have no secrets. I'm waiting for that marvelous time. It's not here. I'm still feeling pretty like, oh, am I crazy? What have I done?
I have to tell you, that emotion sounds very similar to your writing muse.
Yes. Well, maybe I just live there a lot. The place, yeah.
Can we sample that? We can make a sound like a pop song out of that.
Pretty much. I have a feeling though that most people who read this book, they're going to read it, and if they're adults, of course, they're going to say to themselves, "Wow, it's not just me." Because I have a feeling that a lot of people went through similar situations, but just aren't as brave as you are to talk about it and tell people. And then there are going to be a lot of people in their 20s who are going through that and are going to realize that it is okay to stop, because I remember you saying, I think it was in your blog, I can't remember where, might have just been in a Facebook comment somewhere, but you had said something about that the scariest thing to you at the time was becoming sober, because sober was the equivalent of being bored.
Mm-hmm.
Or boring. Or bored.
Both.
Yeah.
A terror of being boring and bored. And that's, you know, that's part of why I drank. And so sobering up was such a revelation that it wasn't at all boring, at least once I got through the anxiety part, and once I started to get into things again, it was the exact opposite, is that it's gotten so much more nuanced and interesting and all that kind of stuff, but it's a process. So yeah, that is why I wrote the book, is that I thought hopefully it'll be helpful to some other people who spend their weekends pretending to drown themselves and other undignified things. And I mean, that the reality is that I wouldn't be a writer today if I hadn't stopped drinking, is that I couldn't seem to get anything together. Not only, you know, it wasn't that I couldn't, just that I couldn't write, it's that I couldn't create anything other than distraction in my life and the lives of people around me. And I also, you know, I couldn't work, never mind write. So, yeah, it's a good thing. But it is a memoir is a totally different thing. It's I got this twitch under my left eye that lasts 3 months. And now before I do interviews, I'm comfortable with you guys, so there's no twitch. But when I've been doing interviews for the book, my left eye just jiggles, this little area drives me nuts, so I have to walk around hanging on to it. So I can't wait for that to go away. One of those things. And, you know, the reality is on that particular subject, the majority of people who are sobering up now tend to be young, because they are hitting so hard and they're moving from booze and sort of softer drugs straight into really, really heavy stuff, and they are either getting clean and sober in their 20s or they're not. They don't make it. You know, I know so many kids who've died, so it's, it's serious business, but I tried to, you know, put a little levity into it, because there is, you have to laugh at it, because it's absolutely ridiculous. So.
Well, it sounds to me like what you have been able to accomplish is to laugh at yourself. I mean, it comes across very crystal clear that you are quite easily able to laugh at yourself.
Yes, I am my own target of my own jokes, but in an affectionate way. That ability to laugh at yourself is important for, if you know, no matter who you are or what it's about. I think that's why I like writing for teens, is that that's a time when if you can laugh at yourself, it makes the whole gig much easier. If you can't, if you've got no sort of ability to have perspective on what's happening and who you are, or the idea that you're going to get through your teen years, ouch, pain, agony.
Yeah, I can remember my hardest part about being a teen was that I didn't see life after being a teen.
Yeah.
You know,
I saw 18 as being the end. Like, that was just, you know, I couldn't see anything. It was like blackness after.
Yeah.
And I think as a writer for young adults, that's like you know, that's one of the things I want teens to realize, is that there is life beyond being a teen. Learn to laugh at yourself now. Enjoy where you are. And when you get to be 18, 19, life can start. It doesn't have to stop.
Oh, thank goodness. What was that?
I just laughed.
He's just laughing.
That's kind of where I come at this stuff from. It's a mix of light and dark in all areas.
Yes.
Of the book and, you know, sort of how I operate in the world. Mostly light.
It's a good approach.
Yeah. And we've probably taken up a lot of your valuable writing time already.
Yes, the ants have probably taken over in the time that we've distracted you from fending them off.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I've never used this webcam because it gives me the terror, so it's not so bad. It's me being able to see you guys.
Are you using a PC or a Mac?
A PC?
James.
I'm Lee.
And you're listening to
Authors Like Us.